home building companies and many residential real estate companies, historically, the valuations have been penalized relative to the broader market because of this view of the highly cyclical nature of these businesses. The resilience that these businesses have shown over the last few years, we would argue, would suggest that there's potential for a re-rate higher or a paradigm shift in the valuation of these companies.
Part two of our real estate investment special is on Consuelo Mack Wealth Track.
Funding provided by Clearbridge Investments, First Eagle Investments, Royce Investment Partners, Baird, Bill Miller, Research Affiliates, Strategus Asset Management, Women Investing in Security and Education, and Matthews Asia.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Wealth Track. I'm Consuelo Mack. If you are a homeowner or an aspiring one, you know that the last couple of years have been turbulent ones, to say the least. COVID drove up demand for homes at a time when the supply of existing homes dried up and new home construction stalled. We are still feeling the impact. Existing home sales plunged 19% last year to a nearly 30-year low, whereas home prices continue to climb. The median price for an existing home is closing in on $400,000, and the median price of a new home is well above that and near all-time records. And the cost of financing a home has soared. Mortgage rates have risen to more than 20-year highs after the Fed dramatically hiked short-term interest rates to fight inflation. What's the outlook for the U.S. housing market, and what are the investment opportunities and risks? In part two of our investment series on real estate, we turn once again to Jeffrey Kolich, portfolio manager of the Barron Real Estate Fund, which he launched in 2009. Rated five-star by Morningstar, the broadly diversified nearly $2 billion fund is ranked in the top 1 percentile in its category for the last 1, 5, and 10-year periods, as well as since its 2009 inception, delivering nearly 14% annualized returns, far outpacing its category and benchmark. The fund is also unusual in its category in that it invests in both commercial and residential real estate, as well as travel-related real estate, alternative managers, services, and real estate tech. I began the interview by asking Kolich for a brief update on the state of the residential real estate market in the U.S. What shape is it in?
So the residential real estate market is a vast market in the U.S. There's the for sale side, the existing home side, the new home sale side, apartments for rent, single family homes for rent, manufactured home for rent. It's a vast market and it's very important to unpack residential real estate. But the big picture for residential real estate, the bottom line view, is that there has been a multi-year structural underinvestment in residential real estate in the United States. If you go back to 1960, back then the country was building about 1.5 million homes per year, that's homes and apartments, when the population was about 180 million people. Fast forward to today, and the country's building the same number of homes and apartments, about 1.5 million per year, yet our population's about 340 million. So the population size is 150 million greater than back in the 60s, yet we're building the same number of homes. You have to shelter the population. That bodes very well for residential land prices, home prices to go higher, rents to go higher over a long period of time. That's the foundation of why we're optimistic about residential real estate.
It's more than a third of your portfolio, a little bit more than a third. So it's clearly an area that you are focusing on at the Barron Real Estate Fund.
That's correct. Residential real estate is a key investment theme for the Barron Real Estate strategy. A good portion of our investments are in public home builders, wonderful companies such as Toll Brothers, D.R. Horton, and Lennar. And what's happened with public home builders, who would have guessed that over the last 4 years, with a pandemic, with home prices going up 40 to 50% in many markets, with mortgage rates going from 3% to 8%, that public home builders or the new home sales market would have been one of the bright stars of the economy. Now, why has that happened? Well, what's happened over the last 4 years or so is that the existing home sale market has been frozen. Why is that? Because 80% of owners of homes have mortgage rates below 5%. About 60% have mortgage rates below 4%. If one owns an existing home, why would you sell your home with a 4% mortgage rate to go buy a new home where the mortgage that you'll take on might be 7 or 8%? So the existing home sale market has frozen, and that's benefited the new home sale market. But what also has benefited the new home sale market is, number one, ever since the housing crisis in 08 or 09, tremendous amount of pent-up demand has built up to purchase homes because the scars are deep from the housing crisis. And with low job growth, a lack of wage growth, an inability to secure mortgages, the millennial who's been delaying home ownership and now household formation is starting, and they're going and looking at communities and seeing very little inventory on the market. And there's a fear of missing out, which if I don't purchase a home now, maybe mortgage rates are going to go higher. So demand has been strong, structural underinvestment in residential real estate. And then there are these secular dynamics which are helping the public home builders, a key portion of our portfolio. The secular that I'm referring to, the work from home dynamic, the ability of a household not to have to live in a city, but an ability to live in the suburbs, helps the new home builders who build homes in many suburbs. That's number one. Number two is existing homes in this country, on average, are about 40 years old. Many people, when they're purchasing a home, don't want to buy a home that's 40 years old, that may have pipes that don't work, or a septic tank that may have a problem, or creaky floors. They want a new product. That's benefiting the new home builders. And then, of course, this lock-in effect with the existing home market also is benefiting. So it has been a very attractive backdrop for the new home sales market. And that's why these companies, D.R. Horton, Lennar, and Toll Brothers, have performed so well over several years. But then there's the rental side of residential real estate. That's apartments for rent, single-family homes for rent, manufactured homes for rent, and we're long-term bullish on this category as well. Once again, there's been a multi-decade structural underinvestment in the apartment side or the rental side of residential real estate, but there are many households that prefer to rent rather than own, don't want to take on a mortgage, prefer the flexibility of renting rather than owning, and that's another attractive segment that we focus on.
And the affordability, is that an issue? And new homes especially.
It's important to separate home ownership versus rentals.
Right.
Typically, a household pays up more to purchase a home than to rent. If you compare one's after-tax monthly mortgage payments or household payments, house ownership payments versus the monthly rental payments, typically, that spread between the two is about 20 to 25%, maybe a little bit higher to own. Now it's much wider. It's in the neighborhood of maybe 40% or so. Why is that? Because home prices have gone up quite a bit over the last several years, about 30, 40, 50%. And of course, mortgage rates are no longer 3%, they're 8%. And so home ownership affordability is unquestionably a challenge. What the well-capitalized and large-scale public home builders have been able to do, the largest home builder in the country, D.R. Horton, Lennar, the second largest, Toll Brother, and others, is they have had the ability to buy down mortgage rates because of the strong profitability margins in their businesses and make home ownership more affordable for households that are looking to buy. Once again, that's one of the key competitive advantages of the public home builders, which has allowed this category of real estate to flourish over the last several years.
The building products and services, which is another large segment of the residential real estate market that you are investing in it on the Barron Real Estate Fund. Talk to us about that.
Broadly speaking, stepping back, home builders and residential related building product companies are not structured as REITs. They're C corps and operating companies. You traditionally would not find these in REIT funds, but you would find them in the Barron Real Estate Related Fund. And it has served our strategy very well for a number of years. And again, this is a long-term investment theme that we think it will continue to do so over a long period of time. Residential related building product companies will benefit from an eventual improvement in existing home sales as households spend more in their homes to refresh their homes, to put a deck in their backyard, to paint their homes, to put a new floor in their homes, etc. And there are a number of companies, and they also benefit, of course, from new home sales as well. So what type of companies? In our portfolio, we own Lowe's, for example, which is the second largest home center company in the United States, the largest being Home Depot. Once again, this is an oligopolistic industry, and what you have with Lowe's is a company that has huge benefits to scale, high cash flow margins, an ability, in our view, to grow its bottom line earnings low to mid-teens over the next several years, yet it trades at a below S&P multiple, PE multiple, has a terrific balance sheet, is buying back stock, and when the existing home sale market begins to improve, this is a company that's going to perform quite well over a long period of time. There are a number of other residential-related building product companies. We own the largest pool distributor in the country, a company called Pool Corp, which is a wonderful recurring cash flow business. We own SiteOne Landscape, which has a huge opportunity to consolidate its business and is five times as large as its next 10 competitors combined. And this company has landscape supplies, again, all to benefit houses, existing home sales, new home sales, et cetera. We have an investment in a company called IBP, which is the largest insulation company for homes, and has a terrific opportunity for acquisitions and to grow its market share, which is currently 30%, we think will be much larger over time. This business, 60% of its sales are correlated to new home sales. So these are variations on how we can find companies that are highly correlated to what's happening both in the existing home sale market and the residential market, and we think will serve our real estate related fund well over a long period of time.
So residential real estate, you know, as you've mentioned, it's always been known as a very cyclical industry. Where are we in the residential real estate cycle now?
So historically, residential real estate has been viewed as a highly cyclical industry. I would suggest, however, that what has transpired over the last 4 years, where residential real estate has been one of the bright stars of the entire economy, despite the fact that there has been a pandemic, despite the fact that there have been supply chain challenges which have impacted these businesses, despite the fact that mortgage rates have gone from 3% ultimately up to 8% in October of 2023, and now at 7%, and residential real estate has continued to flourish. And so I would argue that there are secular drivers that have not been persistent in the past, and that is why residential real estate has performed well. We talk about the lock-in effect, work from home, people ability to focus on new home sales, given the existing homes on average are over 40 years old. And all of this, we would argue that home building companies and many residential real estate companies, historically, the valuations have been penalized relative to the broader market because of this view of the highly cyclical nature of these businesses. The resilience that these businesses have shown over the last few years, we would argue, would suggest that there's potential for a re-rate higher or a paradigm shift in the valuation of these companies. Big picture, home builders historically have been valued at 5 to 10 times earnings. The S&P multiple historically has been 16, 17, 18 times earnings on a price-to-book basis. S&P's 3 times price-to-book, home builders 1 to 2 times. We would argue that the disconnect in valuations is too wide given the resilience, the secular tailwinds we've touched on. And if we're right on that, there's an opportunity for growth in these companies and a valuation re-rate higher, and these can be terrific stocks over a long period of time.
A lot of the residential real estate companies are kind of the mom and pop. They're very, you know, local. And so is there a tremendous amount of consolidation going on within the industry as well, which would be another driver of growth?
Yes, and that's one of the big advantages of the public builders. It's the scale advantages that they have relative to many of the private home builders. The ability of a Lennar, a D.R. Horton, a Toll to procure labor and materials and construction workers and ultimately land, given the scale benefits that they have and the balance sheet advantages that they have relative to the private builders, is a significant opportunity for them. And so we anticipate M&A to be another growth lever for these companies over time.
Talk to us a little bit about land and the availability of land and how constrained it is or how plentiful it is. How does that factor into the home builder's business?
It depends on the geographic market. We tend to focus on markets where there are supply constraints, entitlement constraints. We're looking for well-located land where it's in states or regions where you have a strong demographic backdrop, high population growth, migration growth, wage growth, et cetera. And it's not easy to just purchase land and put up homes everywhere. And so we're seeking home builders that can identify those regions. It's difficult to secure the development rights for land. And so it can be a challenge in some areas of the country. And again, this speaks to the structural underinvestment in residential real estate and why the prospects for land price appreciation, home price appreciation are quite compelling on a multi-year basis.
Advise us as homeowners. Are we going to continue to see appreciation in home prices? Is this a good time to buy a home? Is this a good time to sell a home? Do you have a sense?
The analysis of real estate comes down to the simple economics of demand relative to supply. There is a structural shortage of housing in this country. If a household purchases well-located real estate, a home in a strong demographic market where there's population growth, job growth, wage growth, and you purchased a quality piece of real estate, it's well located in that region, that piece of real estate is going to do very well over a long period of time.
In residential real estate, what role does it play in the Barron Real Estate Fund versus commercial real estate, for instance? What does it add to your portfolio?
But what residential real estate offers is a multi-year opportunity for growth, for faster growth, in our opinion, than many of the REITs, for a very attractive backdrop of an undersupplied market. And so it's part of a well-diversified portfolio and a very important part, as evidenced by about 35% or so of the fund.
Jeff, the one investment for a long-term diversified portfolio, considering residential real estate, is there one company that we should all own some of or consider at any rate?
Well, there are a number of companies that we're optimistic about in residential real estate. But I'll share one with you, and that's Toll Brothers. Just a few weeks ago, my colleague Dave Kirschenbaum and I went down to the corporate headquarters of Toll Brothers and spent a few hours with the management team. And we came back from that meeting more optimistic about the long-term prospects for Toll Brothers than we ever have been. And why is that? Well, number one, this company is a luxury home builder, and they have assembled a terrific land bank of real estate in excellent real estate markets. They have the ability to grow their community count about 10% per year for the next several years. That's number one. Number two, they have very little competition. Most public home builders sell homes at a price range of around $400,000 to $500,000. Toll Brothers' average home price is $1 million. So they don't compete with the public home builders. Their primary competitors are the private home builders who don't have the scale advantages that Toll Brothers has. The third piece is they're just scratching the surface of the opportunity for them. Remember that I discussed earlier that there are about 132 million households in this country. Well, the segment of households that Toll is targeting is about 16 million households, or about 12% of that 132. It's the 16 million that have annual household income of at least $200,000 or more. That's their target audience for million-dollar homes. Well, last year, Toll Brothers sold about 10,000 homes versus an addressable market of 16 million homes. If Toll Brothers sold just 10,000 homes for the next 16 years, they would just reach 1% of the addressable market. And so it's a wonderful backdrop, but then you overlay that this company has a pristine balance sheet, no debt maturities the next few years, $2.5 billion of liquidity. They have some of the highest returns and growth prospects across all of public real estate. They have very few competitors. Oh, by the way, 25% of the purchases of Toll homes don't even take on a mortgage. They're 100% cash buyers. Why? Because they tend to be the wealthier portion, the demographic profile of our country. Then you layer on, ultimately for this company, it's only trading at about 9 to 10 times earnings, despite an opportunity to grow in our, what we see over a long period of time, earnings in the neighborhood of a low double-digit rate. So this is a very exciting long-term opportunity in residential real estate that we think will serve people quite well on a multi-year basis.
And what could throw a monkey wrench into the residential real estate works, the prospects, the really bright prospects that you've outlined for us? What's the biggest threat?
Again, we don't forecast interest rates, inflation, mortgage rates, economy, et cetera, but I do spend time thinking about it and wonder to what extent we'll have structurally higher inflation due to a shortage of labor, due to a shortage of land, due to a shortage of energy infrastructure, due to the fact that the world is deglobalizing, which in effect is inflationary in our country. And if we're in a world of structurally higher inflation and interest rates continue to move higher, that absolutely is going to be a further headwind to affordability. And so that is something that we do monitor. That would be one. Another that I would just flag is the existing home sale market has been frozen because of that lock-in effect that we talked about before.
Right.
On the other hand, if rates don't remain high and come down, no question that's positive for the existing home sale market and for the public home builders. But how that ultimately unfolds and its impact on the public home builders, time will tell, but that's something that we're monitoring as well.
That would actually be something that could be a positive for many of us as well.
No question. If
rates do come down. So, Jeff Kolich, thank you so much again for joining us on Wealth Track to unpack the residential real estate market for us. It's just a fascinating area and one that is very near and dear to most of our hearts. That's for sure. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Consuela. Very much enjoyed today's conversation.
At the close of every Wealth Track, we try to give you one suggestion to help you build and protect your wealth over the long term. This week's action point is a book recommendation that I and several of our guests have mentioned before, but it bears repeating because its author recently passed away. It is Read, Thinking Fast and Slow by the late great Nobel Prize winner Daniel Kahneman. First published in 2011, it is now considered a classic in understanding how the human mind works, including as investors. as the Wall Street Journal's intelligent investor columnist and WealthTrack regular Jason Zweig put it in his tribute, Daniel Kahneman explained investors to themselves before the pioneering work done by Kahneman and his research partner Amos Tversky. Economists had assumed that people were rational, meaning we are self-interested, use all available information to make unbiased decisions. They showed that's nonsense. Investors who take Kahneman and Tversky's lessons to heart can minimize fees, losses, and regrets. Kahneman may well have had more influence on investing than anyone else who wasn't a professional investor. Well, Kahneman is no longer with us, but his seminal work in Thinking Fast and Slow is, and is a fascinating must-read. Next week, labor economist and tireless retirement reformer Teresa Ghilarducci has a plan to fix the uncertainty of retirement. She'll share it with us. In this week's extra feature on WealthTrack.com, Jeff Kolich explains why he created a different model for the Barron Real Estate Fund. Please follow us on Facebook, X, and our YouTube channel. We are so glad you could spend time with us. Thank you for doing so. Have a lovely weekend and make the week ahead a healthy, profitable, and productive one.